Good afternoon and welcome to the LaRouche Show. It's Saturday, May 12, 2012. I'm Harley Schlanger and I will be your host today. We've entered into a most fascinating but dangerous moment in our nation's history. We have in the White House a president who has shown repeatedly his lack of respect for the Constitution. He swore in his oath of office to uphold. His refusal to be accountable to constitutional principles has been clear in many areas of policy, from economics to health care, his preemptive attack on the Supreme Court, which heard arguments on the so-called Affordable Care Act, or his disregard for the role of Congress with recess appointments, signing statements, and I could go on and on and on. But in no area is it more dangerous than in military policy and defense policy. When he absolutely refused to go to the Congress before engaging in military action in Libya. As a UN special report recently released showed, it was the US military which bore the brunt of the so-called NATO operation and which was primarily involved in the regime change in Libya. While some in Congress did move to assert the constitutional authority of the Congress, President Obama rejected their efforts, and in the Senate, he was supported in this rejection by a bipartisan grouping headed by John McCain, a Republican, and John Kerry, a Democrat, who ran cover for him on Libya. In the aftermath of the overthrow and murder of Gaddafi, Lyndon LaRouche warned that an attempt to repeat the Libya process in Syria could lead to a confrontation with Russia and China, risking a blow-up into a possible nuclear World War III. Yet the White House has continued to insist that it has the right to act in humanitarian defense whenever it determines that an atrocity is about to occur without having to go to the Congress. Under the doctrine of right to protect, the administration has established an atrocities prevention board, which claimed to itself the right to take offensive military action, which is outside the constitutional requirement that only the U.S. Congress may authorize the use of military force. Secretary of Defense Leon Panetta even brought up at a congressional hearing that he would consult with the United Nations and NATO before going to the Congress. While most of the members of the Congress have tolerated or even accepted this unconstitutional behavior, one member of the U.S. Congress decided it was necessary to act, to preempt yet another destructive war, destructive to our nation, to our men and women in the armed forces, as well as to international law, if such a war would be conducted outside of our law. That member of Congress, U.S. Representative Walter Jones, a Republican from North Carolina, will be our guest on the program today. To introduce him, I've asked my colleague, Jeff Steinberg, to serve as co-host. So, Jeff, would you please do the honors of introducing Representative Jones?
Sure. First of all, let me thank the congressman for taking the time here on a Saturday afternoon to join us. Congressman Walter Jones has served with distinction as an elected official for more than 28 years. He served for 10 years in the North Carolina General Assembly and is now completing his ninth term in the U.S. House of Representatives, where he serves both on the House Armed Services Committee and the House Financial Services Committee. Earlier this week on Tuesday, Congressman Jones won a resounding victory in his Republican primary, and he's obviously up for general election in November. And the congressman is joining us today from his campaign office in North Carolina. And I want to join Harley in welcoming you to the show and thanking you profoundly for the efforts that you're making on behalf of this country and particularly our men and women in service.
Well, Jeff, thank you for the kind words and the introduction. And I'm delighted to be on the show with you and Harley. And I can't think of a more important subject than a country that continues to send our young men and women to fight overseas without a declaration of war. And that is why you have me on the show today to talk about HCON Resolution 107. And at that time, I'd like to give you a little bit of history of why this has become more and more of an important issue in my mind for our country.
Yes, that I think that would be the most appropriate thing. And let me just mention to our listeners that we will be able to take some questions via email. You can send them to the congressman at radio@larouchepub.com. So let's start right there. What is House Concurrent Resolution 107?
Well, Harley, the resolution that we're talking about, the HCON Resolution 107, expresses the sense of Congress that except in response to an actual or imminent attack against the United States, the use of offensive military force by a president without prior and clear authorization of an act of Congress violates the exclusive power of Congress to declare war under Article 1 of the Constitution and therefore constitutes an impeachable high crime and misdemeanor under Article 2. I want to explain, I have been in Congress for 18 years, as Jeff just made reference to. I did not serve in the military. This all started in my mind about the role of Congress back in 1999 when I joined other members of Congress. And we went to the federal courts when President Bill Clinton went into Kosovo. In our filing led by Congressman Tom Campbell at the time, we accused Clinton of not reporting to Congress within 48 hours of the status of the action as required by the 1973 War Powers Resolution and not first obtaining a declaration of war from Congress as required in the Constitution. Since that time, Mr. Kucinich and I, on June of 2011, along with Jonathan Turley, he's a constitutional lawyer at George Washington University, Mr. Kucinich and I went to the federal courts in Washington, D.C. about President Obama not seeking authority from Congress to invade and attack Libya. And this is why I feel so strongly about the fact that we send our young boys and girls to give their life, their limbs, and we spend billions of dollars that we as a nation don't even have anymore. It's all borrowed money. And I hope your listeners will join us in asking members of Congress to use the vehicle HCON Resolution 107, and let's have a full debate in Congress as what is our role when it comes to war. Let's stop all these little resolutions here and there and resolutions that we gave to President Bush in a war that never should have been fought in Iraq, the misleading lies that were told by the previous administration, and we spent billions of dollars in Iraq, and our kids died and lost their legs, plus the Iraqis who were killed, including children. So I feel very passionate about this. Jeff, you know that. I've just met Harley today. But the American people need to take back the Constitution.
And as I understand it, this is not a partisan issue for you. You mentioned Clinton, you mentioned Obama, and you also mentioned that you thought the vote to give Bush power to go into Iraq was a mistake.
Absolutely.
But you're pushing this to apply not just to Obama, but to any future president. Is that right?
Harley, that's exactly right. It says that a president instead of the president. The president would certainly imply Mr. Obama. No, this is a president. I want Congress to get out of the stands and get on the field when we make decisions about war, because the one thing we found out from the 1999 federal court ruling and also the June 2011 is that the federal courts will always say, well, you can do something about going to war. You can cut the budget for war. That never happens. And I want to be fair about it. Many colleagues will say, and I understand this, I got military bases in eastern North Carolina. They'll say, well, you sent them over there, and how are you going to cut their budget so they can't buy bullets to fight with? So that is why this resolution, I think, is so important. We need to either amend the War Powers Resolution, or we need to take this concurrent resolution and debate in Washington and let the experts come and testify before the Judiciary Committee and say, what is the role of Congress? Are we supposed to be the role of Congress, what the Constitution requires us to do? We declare war, or are we just supposed to sit by and let any president decide what he or she wants to do?
Well, my next question for you is one that previously would have seemed somewhat obvious, but given that this is clearly stated in the Constitution, that it's the exclusive right of the Congress, why is it necessary to have a resolution now?
Hawley, you're right. It is obvious. The problem is that Congress has allowed itself to be neutered, if I can use that word,
sure,
when it comes to the Constitution and the duties of Congress when it comes to war. We haven't declared war since World War II. And we as a nation have been manipulated from, in my opinion, the Vietnam War probably started the manipulation that I could maybe refer to, maybe even before that. But certainly before the Vietnam War was manipulated by Lyndon Baines Johnson and those people around him, McNamara and all those, in a war that we lost 55,000 Americans for what? For what? Now we're trading with Vietnam. We need to bring the Constitution back and make some sense out of going to war.
Now, as far as the immediate situation, to situate the urgency of your resolution, we have an almost uncontrolled situation going on in Syria, where you have Republicans and Democrats, again, Senator McCain, Joe Lieberman, John Kerry, all seem intent on a replay of Libya in Syria. Is that part of what you see as the urgency here?
Well, I'm very concerned about Syria, but also I'm concerned about Iran. I think there are a lot of war games going on right now, and I think there are people within this administration and outside this administration that are putting pressure on the Obama administration to be prepared to go, whether it be Syria or Iran. And I just do not, you know, I'm not against, let me say this, I'm not against having a strong military. In fact, I am for a strong military. I think the Constitution requires that. But to use our men and women as policemen around the world, to go into countries where we do not like the leader of the country. Gaddafi was an evil man, but how many evil people around the world? We can no longer, we are a debtor nation. We spend $10 billion a month in Afghanistan right now, and it's all borrowed money.
And has there been any discussion in the Congress about this right to protect doctrine, which is now being institutionalized with an atrocities prevention board?
Well, the answer is yes, but not much conversation. The whole issue is that the American people need to take back their government. We, for too long, have been controlled by special interests and political action committees. And that's not a real great answer to your statement, but I see it all the time. I've said so many times, if you want to change Washington, you want to give it back to the people, create a national public financing of campaigns. And this does impact on the issue we're talking about today. But the whole thing comes back to the fact that the American people need not to allow Congress to ever send another young man or woman to spend 10 years walking the roads of a foreign country so they can be killed or lose their legs. And this is a start by having this discussion on HCON Resolution 107. I hope those listening to your show today, they will contact their member of Congress in the House. This bill is not in the Senate at this time, so we're concentrating on the House. I'm in the House, and we need to get co-sponsors right now, and we're just starting. That's why I wanted to be on this show. Representative Dan Burton from Indiana is a co-sponsor of HCON Resolution 107. Mike Kaufman himself, a former Marine, is a co-sponsor. John Duncan from Tennessee is a co-sponsor. Tim McClintock from California and Reed Ribble from Wisconsin. They're the co-sponsors we have at this time. But I want to thank Jeff and Rochelle and Stu and all the LaRouche people who are out there trying to push other members of Congress to join in this effort to defend the Constitution.
Well, I think it's important that you raise this point because our listeners, certainly we hope that our listeners are not just sitting there planning to shake their head and say, the Congress is no good. Here you have a congressman who's put himself on the line. In fact, I think the reason that you had an opposition in the Republican primary may well be because of your commitment to these issues.
That's true.
But I think it's important that we make this a bipartisan fight because, after all, as one of my friends said the other day, when soldiers are sent to war, They don't go as Republicans or Democrats, but as Americans. And so we have to get some Democratic co-sponsors on this. Now, you mentioned the Senate. Just to ask a question on that, I understand that Senator Webb has introduced a bill critical of this idea of humanitarian deployments. Are you familiar with the bill? And
well,
is this
actually, Jeff, I brought it to my office. We had a meeting Thursday to map out some strategy, and I've had a chance to bring it home. I've not read it in detail, but let me say I have great respect for Senator Webb, and any effort to create a discussion of this country going to war without declaring war based on the Constitution is worthy. So any effort to get I tell you what, Harley, the problem, Jeff knows this, the problem is that we hardly ever debate the role of Congress when it comes to war. If it wasn't for these lawsuits that I've joined Dennis Kucinich, I joined Tom Campbell in 1999, it would just keep, it's sad for me to say it this way, but it would just keep going on and on and on. 10 years, and now the president is trying to sign a security agreement with Afghanistan to stay there 12 more years. Where are we going to get the money from? I'm worried about fixing the veterans who've lost legs and arms and body parts. How are we going to pay to keep, they've earned the right to be paid, and yet I worry about how we're going to keep their benefits moving forward.
On the constitutional question, I think, look, the most important thing, I'm sure you're familiar with the statement attributed to Benjamin Franklin when he said after the Constitutional Convention, he was asked, what kind of government did you give us? And he said, a Republican or a Republic, if you can keep it.
Right.
And if you look at what we've had for in the kind of idiotic debates the last couple of presidential elections, the use of social issue hot buttons, as opposed to serious discussions about what is the future of this nation, where should we be investing money, what are we doing to our young men and women, what's happening to our education system, these are issues that affect every family, and these are issues which actually are addressed in our Constitution. So I think this is a crucial matter of getting this kind of discussion going.
Holly, if I could divert for just one moment, but it does tie in. A couple years ago, we had the Democrats were the majority, and again, I am a Republican and proud to be one. I have introduced a bill working with Bruce Fein, and the bill said, and it would be a part of the public law, and it basically said that if any president had intentionally misled the American people to go to war, and it could be proven after the fact, then that individual could be indicted and brought to trial. Well, I was able, thanks to Mr. John Conyers, who at that time was the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, but to get a subcommittee hearing, and it was pretty good. They had a couple of experts, and I'm not an expert, by the way. We had a couple panels of experts. So then I went back to Mr. Conyers and asked him if he would hold a full committee hearing and vote on the committee. And there was some opposition from Republicans, and I'll explain that in a minute. And so Mr. Conyers is very close to the new chairman now, Lamar Smith, who's a fine, fine person, let me make that clear, from Texas. And so Bruce Fein and I went to see Lamar Smith to see if he would agree. Mr. Conyers said, if you could get Lamar Smith to agree to bring it to the full committee, I would bring it up for a debate and a vote. And that's all I was trying to get, even if it could not pass. Somebody has to be held responsible when we send our kids to war, and it's not necessary. So let me finish on this story, though. So when I went to see Lamar, and I'm very fond of him, and Bruce went with me, and we talked about it. And Lamar was very honest. He said, Walt, he said, the problem is, I think this might be something that we really need to talk about. He said, but I know what will happen in that committee, and the Democrats would demagogue and talk about George Bush. And so it died. It never got anywhere. So that's why in working, again, with Bruce Fein, we wanted to take, and I've been to meet with Lamar Smith. He's now the chairman. He's going to consider entertaining a hearing. That's why we need your people to get behind talking to members of Congress and say, get behind HCON Resolution 107. 107, HCR 107, because I think that Lamar, he did, even though he would not tell Mr. Conyers to move the bill I just explained about holding someone responsible after they leave office, but still he will entertain HCON resolution because he does know that we need to have this debate.
Harley, if I could
go ahead.
Yeah,
go ahead, Jeff.
I wanted to go back to the earlier discussion when Harley, you raised the issue of why would it be necessary to state something that is already explicit in the Constitution. But Congressman, I was very struck, I guess it was about 2 weeks ago, there was a hearing of the House Armed Services Committee at which Defense Secretary Panetta was testifying, I believe also with General Dempsey, and you and Representative Forbes really backed him into a corner. And from my reading of what Panetta said, he reiterated what was the policy in Libya and would not commit that the president would go to Congress for authorization before going to war.
Jeff, you're right. He was really very clear that the president would not come, in my opinion. I mean, he was not quite that plain, but he did there said that we don't think we have to go to the foreign countries and get the foreign countries to agree that we're doing the right thing before we come to Congress. And that's what the point you were making. Where in the world is the Constitution? It says nothing about Congress having to get the approval from foreign countries before it debates and declare war. That's how far away from the Constitution America has gone.
Really a frightening situation, and I thought that the sort of back-to-back questioning by you and Representative Forbes was crucial in drawing that out. If I remember correctly, the very last thing that Secretary Panetta said was exactly this issue that Congress always has the option to cut off funding, but that's only one of the responsibilities that the Constitution gives to Congress. The overriding one, as you say in HCR 107, is Article 1, Section 8, Paragraph 11, that gives Congress the exclusive authority to declare war.
Jeff, it is so that, and Randy Forbes is a very, very fine member of the House Armed Services Committee from Virginia, and let me go back just a year or so to make another point that involves Randy and also the issue we're talking about. Shortly after President Obama went into Libya, we held hearings on the Armed Services Committee, and Secretary of Defense at that time was Bob Gates, a very fine gentleman, just like Panetta. And Randy asked Gates a question that I will never forget. He said, Mr. Secretary, since we did not even notify Congress that we were going to bomb Libya, let me ask you a question. In your opinion, if Libya sent missiles and struck New York City, would that be a declaration of war? You know, Randy never got a straight answer.
Oh, my God.
They just dance and dodge around this thing because nobody has ever put them in the spotlight. An HCON resolution, in a very small way, will put them in the spotlight. Because I blame Congress as much as I do an administration. If we're not willing to buck an administration, whether it be Democrat or Republican, and say, listen, you might be the President of the United States, but by God, we have a Constitution. And if you want to go to war, you need to come to Congress and ask for a declaration of war. And I don't want to oversimplify it. There are certain situations, I realize that. But when you really look at it, the Congress since the Vietnam War has just been in the stands, not on the playing field.
You're listening to Representative Walter Jones, a distinguished member of Congress, a Republican from North Carolina. And this is the LaRouche Show, and we will take your questions for him. He's going to be with us for a little bit longer, and you can send those questions to radio@larouchepub.com. Now, what you were just speaking about actually brings up a bigger issue as well, which is this idea of an imperial presidency, that the president has, President Obama now I'm talking about, President Bush and Vice President Cheney were moving already in this direction, signing statements and recess appointments. But it's almost as though, and I think President Obama has stated this, the Congress is in his way, and he's going to act for the people above the Congress. Is this something that troubles you?
Holly, it concerns many members in Congress on both sides, but it appears that at this point, when a president makes a public statement similar to what you just said, or takes action, and yet there's not an outrage by the Congress, and the people say, well, I vote for you to go up there and speak for me, it gets very depressing, truthfully, that we can have any president, and you made that clear, but any president that feels that he is, you know, we're supposed to be equal branches of the legislative, judicial, and the executive. And for goodness sakes, the executive, as you have said too many times, they do not see particularly the legislative branch as equal.
Well, I think you see in the population, one of the things they're using is the low popular ratings, low poll ratings for Congress. But I personally think, from the work that I do in organizing, and I'm involved in running five congressional campaigns of LaRouche candidates for Congress, right. But what I see is that part of the anger at Congress is that they're not standing up. It's not that they're doing so many bad things, but they're not fighting on principle.
Well, that again is why I'm grateful to the LaRouche Radio that you allow me to be on it. That's why I'm believe sincerely, not because I introduced this, let me make it clear, but HCON Resolution 107 is an opportunity for the American people. I don't think there's hardly anything as important as making a decision to send a young man or woman to a foreign country to get killed or have their legs blown off. And yet, there is no outrage in this country. I've been raising Cain. I had the Tea Party people. I've said, I can understand you being upset and concerned about this, but why aren't you upset about going to war without declaring war and kids dying? I said to the Wall Street group, they came in my office and I met with some of them. I didn't meet with all of them. My staff did, but I met with a few of them. And I told them, I said, you know, you've got some valid points. I agree with you. Glass-Steagall needs to be reinstated in this country. I'm sorry I haven't voted to repeal it. I said, but let me get to another point. Where is the outrage on the streets about spending $10 billion a month sending kids to die for a corrupt leader named Karzai in a country that you're never going to change? No matter what you do, you're not going to change Afghanistan.
Have you been involved? I know there are some in Congress who have questioned the memo of understanding that was signed last week with Karzai committing us to another 12 years there. Are you involved in some of the action on that?
Well, I'm in the process of shortly we'll be dropping a bill if it should become law, that nothing will happen unless Congress approves it. But I hope to have that bill either next week or the first week in June. I might just go ahead and drop it next week, like I did HCON resolution. I want your listeners to understand, even though I've named only five members of Congress, the way the Congress works, if you get a bill in, then you get a bill number, like we have 107 on this issue. Then you can get shows like this to encourage membership throughout this country to get behind HCON resolution 107. So when I drop the bill, I hope that we're going to be able to do the same thing and get a lot of American people behind that legislation, just like I hope they get behind this resolution, because there is no way if the people don't speak, Congress will just do what Congress wants, actions they take without the will of the people.
Well, let me ask you this for the listeners there who may want to do something. If you were, what's the best way to approach a congressional office? If you have a congressman that you think should be supporting this, or even if they won't support it, but you want to put some pressure on them, how do you go about organizing people to move the Congress?
The best thing to do to really get a congressional office to respond is either telephone calls to a congressional office or letters or asking for meetings. We will be breaking in about a week, about 2 weeks, I think. We'll be all going home, except those that take overseas trips, but that's another issue at another time. we will all be going home, and the citizens that want to go meet with that member of Congress and say, come on and get behind HCON Resolution 107. It's time that you take action as the Constitution requires, not just pass resolutions to send our kids to die. But yes, telephone calls will do it. If a member gets 10 or 15 phone calls, I guarantee you that young man or young woman at the front desk taking those calls is going to bring it to somebody's attention and say, look, we just got 15 or 20 phone calls a day about HCON Resolution 107. Now, you know, then that member of Congress is going to take some interest in it.
All right. Now, I hope our listeners heard that, because a lot of our listeners say to me, well, I made a phone call and nothing happened. But you are saying that in congressional offices, people pay attention to that, and also especially visits.
Well, absolutely. To me, the Internet is fine, but emails, you get thousands of them per day from your congressional district, and that's when it's really hard for a member. But it's you start getting phone calls, and you get 5, 10, 15 phone calls. And you know the way I look at this, Harley and Jeff, why not anybody listening that agrees with us on HCON Resolution 107, why not ask your friends, give them the telephone number of the district office of Congressman Walter Jones, and I'm just using myself as an example, obviously.
Yeah.
But give them a telephone number and say all you got to do is call, and all you've got to say is HCR 107. HCR 107. Support HCR 107. And then that member of Congress or his staff, if they get 10 or 15 phone calls, you'll say, well, what is HCR 107? And then he'll come back. So this is a resolution that if a president bypasses Congress and bombs another country, he can be impeached.
Now, let me take this one step further, because I think I'm very happy that you laid this out so that people are hearing that people in the Congress do respond, or they will have to respond. We're also seeing a bit of an upsurge again of anti-incumbency. We saw Senator Lugar defeated, and I think it's unfortunate because he was someone who was speaking out on these questions along with
yeah.
Senator Corker. But the next question I have for you, if H.R. 107 is passed, is there the guts in the Congress then, if the president does this, to move for impeachment?
Well, I would put it this way. That's a good point. I would put it this way, that if the House of Representatives passed HCON Resolution 107, I promise you, and I would very seldom do I promise anything because I've learned I can't keep them in Congress much, but I can just about promise you that it will get the attention of the administration, because it would send a signal. If you make some decision by bypassing Congress, and you go and bomb another country who is not an imminent threat to America, then we will proceed with impeachment. It will have that kind of effect, truthfully, if
and
we
I,
could
my,
just get it passed in the House.
Now, my other question is that to pass it in the House, you would need some Democratic support, I would think.
Yes.
Are there Democrats you've talked to and Democrats who recognize that this is a problem? I mean, certainly with the budget crisis, with the financial crisis, with the imperial presidency, the precedents that are being set, both again with Bush and Obama, means that if you end up with a Republican president, they could do the same thing. So aren't some of the Democrats getting a little nervous about this, and do you think you can get some Democrats on board?
Well, Harley, with the LaRouche team that works Washington, I think we can get some Democrats on it. But it does take that your listeners back home, if they have a Democratic congressman or a Republican congressman, it doesn't really matter. Just call them and remind them that this is not about Mr. Obama. This is about the weakness of Congress. And that's really what it's about. It's about the weakness of Congress when it comes to declaring war.
Mm-hmm.
Congress gets stronger. Mutual constitutional responsibility. Back HCR 107. That's what this is about. It's not a Democrat or Republican effort. This is an effort by a congressman, and now five congressmen, that believe that Congress has a role that's based on the Constitution. That's
Very
what
good.
It's really all about. That's no, really what it's about.
I want to come up to the question of Glass-Steagall in a moment, but
sure.
Jeff, I wanted to see if you had anything else from the strategic standpoint that you wanted to ask the congressman.
Well, excuse me.
Jeff?
Well, I think that it's really appropriate at this point to just point to the fact, since we're talking about the need for Congress as an institution to act in a bipartisan fashion, that Congressman Jones was one of the initiating co-sponsors of a critical piece of legislation introduced by a Democratic colleague, Marcy Kaptur, which is a bill that now has over 50 sponsors in the House that would reinstate the original Glass-Steagall separation of commercial banks from the investment and insurance sectors. And I think this is an exemplary case of where the interests of the country as a whole trumped any partisan considerations. And I hope that Democratic members of Congress who know that Congressman Jones is absolutely right on HCR 107 will have the same courage that the congressman showed in helping to get the ball rolling on the reinstatement of Glass-Steagall. So these issues of war and peace and the issue of the bankruptcy of our country are, I think, two of the gravest threats to the survival of our constitutional republic. And I know we've talked about the Glass-Steagall issue. You were enthusiastic about the importance of reinstating it. Maybe you could say some things about that. Sure. As well.
Jeff, as I've mentioned so many times in the 9 terms I've been in office, the two votes that I regret the very most, the first being the Iraq War, a very unnecessary war. I didn't vote my conscience. I wish I had. On the second vote that I feel that I've let the people down was the repeal of Glass-Steagall. At the time, except for having people back in my district, which was very important, to say do not expand the opportunity of the banks to get into real estate and to get into insurance and to stocks. And I wish that I had, on both issues, I had the strength I have now, and I give God credit for that, to do what I think is right and not do what some political action committee or special interest says needs to be done. And you know, President Clinton was the, I want to be bipartisan there, President Clinton was the president at the time of the repeal of Glass-Steagall. And his administration and my Republican Party, we were the majority in the House and Senate at the time, and my Republican Party, and I was part of the problem because I voted to repeal it. But thank you for mentioning, I'm also on Marcy Kaptur's bill. It needs to be reinstated, because if not, then we're going to continue to see these failures on Wall Street. They're just going to continue.
I was just going to bring up that we saw this last week, another shock delivered with the J.P. Morgan Chase acknowledging a $2 billion loss, which could have been more than that, from the same involvement with collateralized debt obligations and credit default swaps that were behind the 2008 collapse of Lehman and others.
Right.
Now, the Congress passed a bill, the Dodd-Frank bill, that we identified as a bill that the bankers would love. It did nothing to really install new regulations, and there was an effort to get Glass-Steagall that was specifically crushed by President Obama and Tim Geithner. Now, given that there are 58 co-sponsors, including some Republicans, what are the chances that we can get the Glass-Steagall bill now that it's becoming clear that with the Euro crisis and with the recent J.P. Morgan scandal, that we've done nothing to prevent this from happening again?
Harley, it's going to take, again, we're saying about HCON Resolution 107, the American people have more power than they realize. The Congress and the special interest people, they realize that we got a very difficult economy. People are losing jobs. People are afraid they're going to lose jobs. So they take advantage of this. I want the American people to do what those people on Wall Street did. I mean, I'm not saying they got to go put up a tent somewhere, but for God's sakes, pick up the phone and make a call. And if they will do that, you Congress, as someone said, one of you or Jeff said a while ago, Harley, I mean, our approval rate is around 12 or 14%.
Right.
If you can't pick up the phone but now and say to a member of Congress, there are two issues that I'm very concerned about. One is fighting wars without a constitutional approval. The second is the repeal of Glass-Steagall that allowed banks to create a Sodom and Gomorrah on Wall Street.
Yeah, the concept of too big to fail, which is something which we should never have. There's nothing too big to fail except the U.S. government, which we can't allow to fail, and that's our lack of interest in these issues is precisely allowing that to happen.
Well, I know Mr. LaRouche and the LaRouche team that I work with in Washington, one of them being Jeff and yourself, but yourselves. But the point is that it is, I don't want to oversimplify it, but just like when I was in Washington during the bailout of Wall Street, we were there 2 days, and my chief of staff, Glenn Downs, and myself were the only two in the office. I didn't ask the staff to come in on Saturday and Sunday, and we ended up, I think, voting on Sunday. And what I did, I couldn't watch enough football, quite frankly. What I would do is every fourth or fifth call, I didn't really time it. I want you to understand. I'm just guessing that one. I would go answer the phone. And the people would say, well, I want to leave a message for Congressman Jones. I said, well, you got him. It's me. You really? You're kidding me. Is you? Yes, it is. And then I would take the question. And I'm not exaggerating. It was running 9-1 not to bail out Wall Street.
Right.
I didn't vote to bail out Wall Street. But I would tell the listeners to your show today, pick up the phone on these two issues and call. And you know what? Hold the people to the fire. The time for the American people to take back their government is now. It won't be tomorrow. Tomorrow be too late. It's now.
Well, we do have an election this year, and it's not too late to make these issues central issues in the election, which I think are probably more important for the future of this nation than the issues that were debated in the Republican debates or the ones that the president seems to want to take up with the gay marriage and things of that sort. So I really think when you're talking to us, I mean, this is our whole raison d'etre, to move the American people back into politics.
Right.
And I think this point that's come through repeatedly in this discussion is that you believe that principles ultimately are more important than party, that patriotism and love of country and the future of the nation trumps partisanship anytime.
Absolutely, Harley. I can honestly say that many, many people say, Walter, you know, I vote for you because I know that you're taking a stand against your own party if you think it's the right thing to do for the people. And they're more than just me. I'm not going to sound like I'm the only one. And Jeff knows them, and probably you know them too. But the problem is that people get into Washington, and it's all about fundraising. It's all about, we got to raise money. You know, we got to hold the power. We got to do this. We got to do that. Well, look and see where the majority of the money comes from. OpenSecrets.com. Any of your listeners can go on that. Look and see where the money's coming from. And I take PAC money, too. I want to be fair about it, but I'm also on a couple of bills, one by John Larson, to create public finance, voluntary public financing campaigns. I'm part of the problem in this, and on this issue, but I'm also trying to be part of the solution.
Speaking of political activism and getting the American people behind the right policies, I just want to interrupt with a question that's been sent in. There's a group of about 20 organizers gathered in New Jersey. They are basically campaign volunteers for Diane Sayers' campaign in New Jersey. She's one of the five members of the LaRouche Democratic Slate. But one of the people who's there, and they're listening to this broadcast live right now, a man named Clark King from Philadelphia sent in a question for you. He says, it appears that perpetual war is expanding with the European anti-ballistic missile expansion set to be ratified on May 20th at the Chicago NATO meeting, where there'll be new elements installed in Poland and other parts of Europe, potentially aimed at Russia. Will the Congress challenge this deployment and make other efforts to curb this potential expansion of war?
My answer would be that, of course, if it's a treaty, it goes to the Senate, not to the House. But I believe sincerely that there are those of us in both parties that are saying, you know, it's time. John Gary Mendy from California had a, during the Armed Services markup last week, he had an amendment that would delay the creation of a missile defense system on the East Coast. I was the one or two Republicans that voted with him. It'll come back on the floor. It failed. But this, again, I think the gentleman from Philadelphia is exactly right. The voices of the people have got to be heard. And this lady in New Jersey that's running, I mean, I hope she'll start, and I'm sure she will, but need to start speaking out and telling people there are those in all parties, I will be fair about it, that are trying to do what's right for this country. But if you're not going to follow the Constitution, you'll never get this country straight. It will never happen.
Well, I hope people are getting the sense here that this is something that you actually believe could be done, and that even if it couldn't be done, you know it's the right thing to do, and you're going to fight for it.
Harley, I'm going to fight for it for this reason. I'm 69. I'm healthy at this point. I'm going to do everything I can because there's not a whole lot of time left for this country to be a great nation. A great nation is great because it rebuilds itself when it's hurting. And when I look at the fact that we are borrowing money from the Chinese all over the world and spending it all over the world is what I meant to say, $10 billion in Afghanistan, I think America is on a 12-hour clock and we're in the 11th hour. There's no 1 a.m. We either get it fixed now, or we're not going to fix it overnight. I won't live long enough to see it fixed, but maybe your son or daughter, you're visiting your mom, maybe that child that you and your wife have brought into this world, maybe when he or she gets to be 30 years of age, she'll be able to say to you and your wife, Mom and Dad, you know what? This is the greatest nation in the world. But it's only going to be great because we come back to the Constitution.
Well, I thank you for joining us, and I know you said you had to leave at about 10 minutes to the hour,
right.
So we have a couple of minutes left. If you want to make one final statement to our listeners, and I'm really insisting that our listeners not be listeners today, but be turned into activists, because I think your passion for this resonates with people who are supporters of Mr. LaRouche, but we need to make sure that there's no cynicism that gets in the way. So do you have some final comments you'd like to make?
Harley and Jeff, thank you for this opportunity. I really enjoyed it. I've learned a lot by listening to both of you. Please just take one issue that deals with the Constitution, and that is the role of the executive branch in Congress. And make the calls, tell Congress to get a backbone and to meet its constitutional responsibilities when it comes to declaring war. I've seen four kids at Walter Reed that have no body parts below their waist. Nothing, nothing, nothing below their waist. Don't they owe to give half their body based on the Constitution, based on the fact that Congress declared war? Please pick up the phone, call that member of Congress, and just say, please join in the effort on HCR 107, Congress, return your constitutional powers and declare war.
That's Walter Jones, a Republican congressman from North Carolina. I thank you for your time today,
and I
thank you for your commitment to this fight. And hopefully we'll be able to bring you on again to get an update on this.
Well, thank you both, and God bless America. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Goodbye. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Now, so, Jeff, look, this, I think, was a clarion call, and it's also important for people to hear this from a congressman, don't you think?
Absolutely, and I'll tell you, he's a singular figure in the Congress. I know that Congressman Jones personally has sent more than 10,000 letters to families of soldiers and sailors who have either been killed or injured just in the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. His congressional district includes Camp Lejeune, which is the major Marine Corps base on the East Coast. So he's sent to Congress by a constituency that includes a very large number of military families. And I've seen literally thousands of letters that he's received from those families expressing their gratitude for what he's doing and the fact that he shows personal concern for them. I remember during the Bush presidency that the bodies of American soldiers killed in Iraq and Afghanistan were sort of snuck into the country after midnight at Andrews Air Force Base so that there would be no public display. It was a national embarrassment when that happened, and Congressman Jones takes things in the exact opposite direction.
Well, Jeff, let me just, because we just have a few minutes left, but I want to get to the point that actually goes from the sense of urgency, which is that this week there was a very sharp rebuke given to President Obama by newly inaugurated President Putin when he announced he's not coming to the G8 summit in Washington. This plays into the real crisis that most people don't know about that's come up with the placement of these missiles. So can you just give us a quick update on where we stand on this?
Yeah, sure. Well, look, Lyndon LaRouche has made the point since no later than April of 2009 that President Obama is operating under orders from London. And basically, the British financial system, the City of London-centered current international financial system, especially the transatlantic region, is absolutely irreversibly bankrupt and finished. The collapse of the Spanish banks, the $2 billion in losses by JP Morgan Chase are just simply examples in the last few days of that reaching an absolute breakpoint. And for that reason, the British are looking to break resistance to their drive for a radical Malthusian population reduction agenda, in which the major obstacles to that are the fact that Russia and China are powerful sovereign countries, and the strategy was to basically use things like the war provocations in the Middle East, like the deployment of the European ballistic missile system, as direct provocations to Russia and also to China, where there's also an Asia-Pacific missile defense plan being put in place. The objective here was to get the Russian government to basically back down and ask for a negotiation process. And instead, what's happened is that the Russians have responded by putting their foot down in the most visible and obvious way. Last week at a Moscow conference on missile defense, the Russian Minister of Defense, the Chief of Staff of the Russian Armed Forces, and other officials basically said, if this deployment goes forward, at a certain point, it will clearly be directed against Russia as a strategic shift in the overall balance. And at that point, Russia will act militarily and preventively to knock out those ABM systems. That's a trigger for war. And it caused shockwaves throughout the United States and Europe, because the simple point is that Putin did not back down. And now we're in a kind of critical countdown moment. How does London respond to the fact that Putin did not blink? The Chinese have similarly made very strong statements that they're not going to cave in. Russia and China vetoed the attempt to get a UN fig leaf of endorsement for regime change in Syria, as was carried out last year in Libya.
Well, let me ask you then, with this, I mean, this is a clear statement. The White House tended to try to poo-poo the Putin's not coming, but your sense of the intelligence community, the military, they're clear on the fact that the Russians are not bluffing, but where's Obama going with this?
Well, this is the crucial question that we're going to see in the immediate days ahead. There have been statements in the last 24 hours by the Russian Minister of Defense and by newly installed President Putin in which they've basically said, we're at a crossroad. If this missile deployment goes forward and there is not some kind of a written guarantee, memorandum of understanding that it's not directed against Russia with verification, then Russia is on a collision course. And how Obama responds is one thing, because as a Nero-like personality, Obama's response is going to basically to go berserk, and we could be very well on the edge of a thermonuclear confrontation. And I'm not talking 6 months or a year from now, I'm talking in the immediate days ahead. May 20th is the NATO summit meeting in Chicago, where one of the first agenda items is to be the ratification of moving into the next phase of deployment of this European missile defense.
So that could even be a trigger point there.
That's right. And so you've got Obama's personality and Obama's role, and then you've got the question of how will his advisors react? How will the U.S. military respond? How will the British react to the fact that their efforts to force a capitulation on the part of President Putin have failed miserably and have actually backfired in their face? Look, the other thing that's going on right now is between Congressman Jones's initiative in the House, Senator Webb's initiative in the Senate, the vote by the House of Representatives on an overwhelming bipartisan basis,
right,
to strip some of the funding of the Department of Justice, because taxpayers should not be forced to put up their money to allow the Justice Department to lie to Congress and violate the Constitution. This is all indicative of a shift in the direction of the strategic situation.
Well, I think that's where we can locate the importance of what Congressman Jones told us today, that the real issue here up to this point has been the weakness of the Congress, but that the only antidote to that is going to be the strength of the American people.
That's right. And look, this is an election year. I'm up on Capitol Hill very frequently, and what the congressman said is absolutely right. You walk into any office, whether in the House or in the Senate, and there's some young people, young staffers, sitting there in the reception area answering the phones, and they are taking copious notes and keeping a scorecard on the issues that the constituents are calling about and what positions those constituents want the members of Congress to take. If a congressional office gets dozens of calls demanding that that member co-sponsor House Concurrent Resolution 107, then I guarantee that there will be a flurry of new sponsors and that we will break the barrier and get some Democrats on board. The only reason that Democrats from the Progressive Caucus in particular have not signed on to this yet is that they are coming under excruciating pressure from the White House and from the DNC to stick with party and party discipline, even though this issue of war and peace and the ripping up of the Constitution is something that affects every member of Congress, no matter what party they're in.
Well, and as James Carville said the other day, if the Democrats think that they're in for an easy ride in the presidential race, they're not paying attention. Look at the rebellion against the incumbents that knocked out Sarkozy in France, that knocked out the pro-European Union parties in Greece. And so we're at a moment of rebellion where it becomes possible for the people to take their proper role in the United States as citizens and bring the Congress into coherence with what's necessary for the future.
You know, that 42% of the voters in the Democratic primary in West Virginia this past week voted for a guy who's sitting in jail as a felon, convicted felon, rather than vote for Obama. 42%, and this is not a primary where Republicans were allowed to cross over. You could only vote in that Democratic primary if you were either a registered Democrat or an independent.
Well, that means four out of 10 Democrats voted against Obama, and only 2 out of 3 Republicans voted for the presumptive nominee Romney.
Right.
So we can still change the policy. And I think what we got from Congressman Jones is that our listeners have to get on the phones, get out in the neighborhood, go to LaRouchePAC.com to get updates and get this around your neighborhood. We've got to save this nation. That's what LPAC is doing, and you have to become a part of that. Jeff, we're basically out of time. Thanks very much for joining us today, Jeff, and please extend our great thanks to Congressman Jones. And to our listeners, you've got your work cut out for you. This has been another edition of the LaRouche Show, and we will be back next Saturday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time for the next LaRouche Show.